hey, Richmond's a top 25 team. So, and Kentucky's, you know, obviously young, but I saw some really good things that Kentucky did, especially defensively, and what they'll continue to do and get better at. But the big thing is they didn't make shots, and Richmond just played a terrific basketball game.
KU men's basketball coach Bill Self sharing his thoughts on Kentucky losing to Richmond in their last game. Richmond is a top 25 team, as is Kentucky. They're ranked 20th in the new poll. KU dropped from 6-7. No shame in that, losing by 12. They opened the season on Thanksgiving Day in Fort Myers, Florida, against number one Gonzaga, and then winning over St. Joe by 22. Christian Brown coming off a 30-point, 9-rebound, 5-made three-pointer performance. And KU will have a battle against another Blue Blood tonight. KU and Kentucky both 1-1, 8 o'clock pregame, and tip times approximately 8:30 tonight in Indianapolis on Z96.3 Lake. And we'll be interested to see what KU does. David McCormick, they need to get him more involved. He's kind of had his ups and downs so far this season, but KU certainly has more experience. Kentucky, of course, has all that youthful talent. It's like every single year with John Calipari and his squad. So KU might be catching Kentucky at the right time early in the year, and we look forward to that one tonight on the tube or on the radio on Z96.3 The Lake. The K-State men get their first victory of the season last night, 62-58 over UMKC. They jumped out to an early two-touchdown field goal lead, 17-0, and then held on and won by 4. Bruce Weber, happy to get that first win of the season.
Obviously, we're happy we won the game. I really challenged them. You know, all we've talked about is improving, getting better, giving ourselves a chance to win. Again, great energy, great effort, great defense. Start the game, you're up 17-0. I guess our next step, you know, we led double digits first half against Colorado, led double digits today, but we don't continue that. And I hope it comes through experience. I hope it comes through execution.
K-State back in action on Saturday at 7 o'clock at Bramlage against UNLV. K-State led with a balanced offensive attack, 14 points each from sophomore DeJuan Gordon and freshman Nigel Pack. K-State gets their first win. They're now 1-2 on the season. In regards to high school basketball and high school wrestling, well, we do have locker room chats that start this week, so we'll begin there, and then we'll start to try to figure out when we're going to have games on the radio.
Yes, locker room chats beginning here tonight. We'll talk with the wrestling coaches of Beloit, Andy Nemchek, Nate Brown of Osborne, and Brock Hutchinson from Smith Center. And those will start around 5:10 to 5:15 tonight and can be heard online as well at katycountry94.com. And then basketball locker room chats Wednesday and Thursday. And we're going to navigate through these coaches. They're going to have games this week, and some that most really that aren't in our immediate area. So we'll navigate through all those locker room chats the best we can throughout the season. And hear from the coaches basketball Wednesday and Thursday nights beginning around 5:10 to 5:15 each night. As Wade said, there's been plenty of postponements and cancellations and things of that nature here for week one. High school basketball, we added another postponement yesterday. Osborne at Southern Cloud schedule for Friday has been postponed. So that's added to Beloit at Concordia, Natoma at St. John's Tipton, Pike Valley at Rock Hills, and Lakeside at Tescott that have been postponed just for Friday night. Lakeside also sent word yesterday that their first game will not be until at least December 15th when they take on Bennington. They have postponed or canceled this depending on how the schedule falls and where they can fill things in. But all their games next week that would have been originally part of that Lakeside preseason tournament, they had moved those games to host sites instead of having four teams each day at one place. But now that has been wiped off with postponements, as they were supposed to play Stockton, Osborne, and Thunder Ridge next Tuesday, Friday, and Saturday. So those games have all been postponed for Lakeside High School at this point in time. So that's all we know as far as getting real deep into the season with a certain school, but we expect to have plenty more postponements as we continue on with winter sports, and we'll see when things can get underway for our area teams and when we'll have basketball on the radio. We will not have a game on the radio on Friday night, so we'll see if we can get going next week, and we'll keep track of how things go for our area squads for what would be week two of the high school basketball season normally next week. That's where we're at with high school sports. The latest can be found at ncksports.com. I did get word also this morning KBCA rankings will not be out for a little bit until they do the split of 1A, until Keisha makes those determinations. So if you've been waiting for Kansas Basketball Coaches Association rankings as well, we'll have those as soon as they have them and are ready to publish those from the KBCA. So that's the latest in local sports and what's going on here in the local sporting world today.
Okay, I've been busy, so I'm trying to do something so you can fill. And so wrestling, we're on this week?
Yes, we're on for all wrestling except for the Lincoln Schmeidler invite this weekend. That one has been canceled. So everything else, as far as I know right now, wrestling is still going, and the Osborne Invitational this weekend, and we'll see if Beloit can get going this weekend as well. So everything right now from that aspect that I know of is still a go. Again, the Lincoln Schmeidler Invitational for Saturday has been canceled, as we mentioned. So wrestling will hope to get everything in here this weekend.
All right. Last night, Monday Night Football, it was the Seahawks versus the Eagles. Seahawks come away with the win, but some people might be very unhappy with the way the game ended. More on that in a moment.
From the 16, trying on the ground. Chris Carson picking and choosing his way, trying to stay on his feet, and he'll get there. Touchdown, Chris Carson from 16 yards away.
Seahawks win 23-17. Have any idea why people might be really upset last night with what happened at the end of the game?
There's probably a spread that went the wrong way.
That is correct. Well done. Well done. Didn't know if you get it. Well done. So it was 23-20. Here's the situation. Fans who bet on the Seahawks to cover the 6.5-point spread on Monday night had to be feeling good after Jason Myers kicked his third field goal, gave Seattle a 23-9 lead over the Eagles with a minute 14 left in the game. The Eagles' offense, after all, had struggled to move the ball up until that point in the game, as Philadelphia quarterback Carson Wentz had thrown for just 157 yards on 41 attempts in the game's first 58 minutes and 46 seconds. But after Boston Scott returned the ensuing kickoff 40 yards, Wentz moved the Eagles to the Seahawks' 33-yard line with 12 seconds left in the game. From there, Wentz's Hail Mary was caught by tight end Richard Rodgers, and that cut the Eagles' deficit to 8. That's no big deal. It's no big deal. 6.5-point spread, right? So it's 23-15. You know, obviously Eagles should just kick an extra point, and I cover on my money.
Yeah.
No, they go for 2. And Miles Sanders scored the 2. And thus, if you bet on the Seahawks to cover the 6.5-point spread, you were burned by a Hail Mary and a 2-point conversion. And the Eagles cover the 6.5-point spread, scoring 8 points in the final 12 seconds. Is why you don't bet, people. This is why you don't wager. BP, anybody else out there that I know that, you know, wagers from time to time, this is why you don't do it.
All things that meant nothing for either team.
Right.
Unless there's a situation late in the year where you have to go to points for a tiebreaker or something.
And that's why
the
Eagles went for 2, probably, because of some, you know, points thing, although
NFC
it never comes down to that.
No. But,
and plus they have a tie, so on their record, the tie will, in essence, break the tie in that case, because there will be no tie, actually, because unless somebody else ties in the division. So the Eagles are now 3-7-1, and yet only a half a game out of first. I'm telling you, the NFC East should just forfeit their playoff game, or just not forfeit it, just hand it to somebody else. And under the current situation, they'll have a home game, first-round playoffs, which is embarrassing and sad, but they're so bad, these teams, they should lose anyway. And home field isn't
fight for that number 5 spot, I'll tell you that, though.
But yeah, right. Whoever wants a 5 gets the 4, and it's the NFC East winner. I will say the home field advantage doesn't mean much this year.
No.
Just, you know, traveling is the thing, but the fans won't be a factor. Seattle 8-3 now in the top of the NFC West. Due to continued COVID-19 concerns, the Baltimore Ravens-Pittsburgh Steelers football game has been moved to 2:40 tomorrow afternoon on NBC because they had a commitment to the Rockefeller lighting ceremony tomorrow night, and thus NFL is no longer undefeated. They're beaten by a tree lighting ceremony that NBC had commitments to for Rockefeller Center because it's just not the same if you turn on the lights at 2:30 in the afternoon. Which is true. You want the lights coming on at night, you know. So the NFL is going to have Wednesday afternoon football. So for those of you that love the Ravens, Steelers, or just want an excuse to get out of work, or maybe you have your phone and you're pulling it up on an app or whatever, and you're not going to get anything done tomorrow afternoon at 2:40, that's the plan as of now. Two other games have likewise been moved. The Steelers will host the Washington football team on Monday at 4 o'clock our time. And that was originally slated for Sunday. The Ravens then will host the Cowboys next Tuesday at 7:05 our time. This is the third time the Ravens-Steelers game originally scheduled for Thanksgiving night has been moved. Originally slated to be played on Thanksgiving night, it was postponed until Sunday, then moved to Tuesday, and now moved to Wednesday. And the reason they postponed another day is to gain an extra day of COVID-19 testing results and to allow Ravens players time to train and avoid muscle strains. There have been, I think, 18 members of the team that have COVID or on COVID-restricted lists now, including Lamar Jackson. Mm-hmm. They will get their running backs back, though, by playing tomorrow instead of today, J.K. Dobbins and Mark Ingram. So we'll see if they play tomorrow. Here's the thing. I think this would be the easiest thing to do, but at the same time, I think there's going to be more problems here in the final 5-6 weeks of the regular season, so I see why the NFL is doing what they're doing. But I think what they could have easily done is, listen, you eliminate 2 weeks between the Super Bowl and the title games, conference games. You don't need 2 weeks. The buildup is just horrendous. So you have 1 week between the Super Bowl and the conference title games, so you gain that week. So basically what you're doing, you're just moving the championship games and the conferences back a week. And then you get an extra week at the early part of January, I think it's January 9th, where you could have the Steelers-Ravens. Just move that game to that date.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't have to shuffle and mess everything up for the Cowboys and the Washington football team, because it's not just the Steelers and Ravens that are affected by this. It's all these other teams. The other thing, too, is, you know, for Todd Clover and all those Miami Dolphin fans hanging on to 1972, which was a million years ago, on the undefeated, only team going undefeated to win the Super Bowl, which, of course, they only had to play 17 games. The Patriots actually went 18-0 and beat that record, but then had to play a 19th game and lost thanks to a weird, you know, ball on top of a player's helmet that was pulled in, or they would have won and been 19-0, which I'm okay they didn't win. But this helps the Dolphins players that are still alive to pop the champagne, if they can even drink champagne anymore. Maybe they drink orange juice, whatever it might be. I don't know.
Yeah.
But Pedialyte, you know, anything like that. Hey, I drink Pedialyte, so if you think I'm making fun of somebody, I've drank Pedialyte before. It's no big deal. But when you look at it, I mean, this bodes well for the Dolphins to not see anybody go undefeated, because the Steelers are 10-0, and now their game's been moved back multiple times, and you could say, well, the Ravens are going to be missing Lamar Jackson and missing players, so the Steelers have a better chance of winning this game. True, they do. But then they got a short week turnaround, played the Washington football team, and I know they're not that great, but they're better than the Cowboys, and the Steelers barely beat the Cowboys recently. And Cowboys got waxed by the Washington football team, and they're playing better football, Washington is. And it just messes up your whole schedule. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, it doesn't bode well for the Steelers to go undefeated. And here's the interesting thing we've talked about before. The Chiefs and the Steelers could both go 15-1. It's possible. They both go 15-1. And then I don't know how the tiebreaker will be, because the Chiefs and the Steelers would both have a game lost to the AFC, assuming the Steelers lose to an AFC team. If the Steelers would lose to an NFC team, which I don't know who's left on their schedule, then the Steelers would actually get the number one seed, because mm-hmm. it goes to head-to-head, which they obviously didn't play, and then it goes to the situation with the winning percentage within your own conference and so forth and so on. So I don't know what is going to happen there, but this doesn't bode well for the Steelers trying to go undefeated. It doesn't help at all.
No. I mean, it gets you out of your routine, and, yeah, it's not – no, I agree with that. It's not good. It does affect how you prepare. It affects every mental aspect of what you're doing on a regular week. But, and, you know, they've had to deal with this before, and maybe they're just going to get – they didn't have a game move, but they had a game move. They had an early bye week that they weren't expecting. So they've had a lot of different things happen to them this year with all this. That's none of it their fault. That's what's crazy about it.
Right. The Steelers' schedule, once they get the game in against the Ravens, here's their schedule, if I can pull it up here. They would have the Washington football team at home. They'd be at the Bills on Sunday night, which I think could be their first loss. And then they're at the Bengals, which doesn't look hard at all now with Joe Burrow out. Host the Colts, which who knows. And then they're at the Browns, which they have the Browns number. I don't see the Steelers losing more than two games here. And the Chiefs could easily stumble and lose one more, and then they're both 14-2. So if you're the Chiefs, they need to lose to an AFC team. That's as simple as that. AFC team, or just lose two games, and the Chiefs win out.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know how important it is. I know the bye is the most important part, because with the new playoff system, the number one seed gets a bye. It really doesn't matter home field anymore. I mean, Mahomes is 20-4 on the road in his career, for crying out loud, averaging 39 points in the four losses. We know Mahomes can go on the road and do things. We just saw it in Tampa Bay when they lit up the Buccaneers' really great defense for 359 yards in one half. So and then you don't have fans anyway right now, and if you do, it's not a lot. So the home field is really no big deal anymore, at least definitely not this year. in the National Football League. Now, yeah, you have to travel, but the Chiefs can handle that. The biggest thing and reason you want the number one seed in the bye, the only bye you get since they expanded the playoff field to seven teams in each conference, is that you get the week off. That's the biggest thing. That's what you want. I did think about this, though, the other day, that wouldn't it be something if the Chiefs, whether they get the number one seed or not, let's say they get the two seed, will they be at home in the first round of the playoffs against possibly the Raiders, the Browns, or somebody like that? Wouldn't it be something if all of a sudden, miraculously, the Chiefs say, hey, we can have 80,000 people now?
Yeah.
That, and yeah, I'll tell you something, that would be even bigger advantage than ever before. You know why? Because teams aren't used to it all year long.
No. Yeah.
I mean, that would be a gigantic advantage. Or even if the Chiefs bumped it from 16,000 to 40,000.
Yeah.
Half capacity. I mean, this, you could see that maybe happen.
Definitely.
You know? I mean, the Chiefs are one of the few teams that are allowing that many fans in the NFL. So that could be important, whether they're the one or the two seed. Or, you know, be the one seed and then have a bye, and then you get past the middle of January, and then the cases are going down, positivity rates are going down. You need to say, hey, let's let everybody go. And then a week later, oh, nobody can come to the AFC title game.
Yeah. Type of thing.
Here's an insane Patrick Mahomes statistic. Have you seen this one? Most games with 400-plus yards, 3-plus touchdown passes, and no interceptions. Drew Brees has the most games with those numbers, 9. It's taken him 284 games to get to those 9 great contests. Tom Brady has 5 of those games, 297 career games. Peyton Manning had 5 in 266 games. Aaron Rodgers has 4 in 192 games. And Ben Roethlisberger has 4 of those games in 228 career games. Patrick Mahomes has 4 games in his career already with 400 or more passing yards, 3 or more passing touchdowns, and no interceptions. And he's done it in 42 games. So he's done what Rodgers and Roethlisberger did. He's done in 176 or 180 less games than Roethlisberger, 150 games less than Rodgers, which that's 10 years worth of football, by the way. And if he just gets one more this season, which could easily happen, he would have 5 and be second all time in that category, having played less than 50 games. And the record is 9 with Brees, and who's played almost 300 games. That's an insane statistic.
Yeah,
and I, you know, the thing that's really crazy, and I always go back to this, is that so many people that think they're so smart, that get paid lots of money nationally to be experts on draft day, talked about how Mahomes was reckless, how Mahomes could be a turnover machine in the National Football League, but yet you go back and look at his numbers at Texas Tech, his TD to interception ratio was 5-1. So there wasn't even proof then. They caught up on a couple throws he made that were picked off when he had to make something happen because his defense was horrendous at Texas Tech. I mean, for crying out loud, what do you do? Throw for, what was it, 800 yards and lose in a game or something like that?
I think it was seven.
Seven
maybe.
Something?
I
forgot what it was. Yeah. But, I mean, the guy was not a turnover machine at Texas Tech. He wasn't. And I'm pulling up these stats to see if I can find them. Here's college football stats, because I pulled them up before. There we go. At Texas Tech, Patrick Mahomes had 93 touchdowns, 29 interceptions, which is a ratio of 3-1. So I was off a little bit. That's still pretty good. But his last year at Texas Tech, he had 41 touchdowns and 10 interceptions, and yet the knock on Mahomes going to NFL was he's a turnover machine. Makes horrible decisions. And he did that when his team was behind almost all the time or in shootouts all the time. So you know he had to throw the ball even more than most people. He had 591 attempts and only threw 10 interceptions his last year at Texas Tech. So all these guys, and threw for over 5,000 yards, all these guys were wrong. All those people were wrong. People get paid all this money, and they ended up being wrong. And now he's in the NFL, and he has, what, 30 touchdowns and 2 interceptions right now?
Yeah, it's 2.
His career in the NFL, 106 touchdown passes, 20 interceptions.
Mm-hmm.
That's over 5-1 ratio. He's better in the pros than he was in college. Now, Andy Reid gets credit for that.
Well, Bieniemy
gets credit for that. Yeah. It helps to have weapons, but he had some weapons at Texas Tech, too. It's just amazing. In his career, Mahomes has thrown for already almost 13,000 yards. His quarterback rating is 111, only 20 interceptions, and he's completing 67% of his passes. And he's 25. He just turned 25. I mean, I saw people saying yesterday that he's underpaid at $503 million. Now, for regular people, you'll say that's insane. But honestly, based on the value, maybe not. And by the way, Mahomes' record at Texas Tech, he had 819 total yards. He threw for 734 in that game, which means he ran for 85.
Yeah, he had 12 carries for 85 and two touchdowns.
And he lost!
Yeah.
How does it's not his fault they lost that game. 819 yards against Oklahoma and lost. 734 passing.
Yeah, the defense gave up seven touchdown passes and 545.
When that Baker was playing against him?
Yeah.
So Mahomes' numbers are insane, and there's another one to tell you. Most games with 400-plus yards, three-plus pass touchdowns, and zero interceptions, Mahomes. And I've heard this, four of those games in just 42 career games is insane. The other thing, which means that 10% of his games he started in the league, he's done that.
Mm-hmm.
That's insane. The other thing that's interesting about Mahomes, and when you look at his numbers, people say, well, he gets away with so many interceptions to get called back due to penalty. Most of those are because he already knows he knows, drew you offside, so he'll throw it up for grabs anyway, is smart.
Sunday,
which is smart. You take a shot. You might get pass interference. You might get a deflected pass for a touchdown. When you know, and here's how you know. I've heard people say, well, you know, sometime that's going to bite him in the butt because it could be on the offense. No, it won't. If it's on the offense, the play's dead automatically.
Mm-hmm.
So if they let the play go on and he knows somebody jumped, he knows it's a free play every time. That's how smart he is. Aaron Rodgers does a great job of this as well. And then he did make one bad throw there that got picked off by the Bucs, but he got hit in the head, so a personal foul, so they erased the interception. I will say he has had probably at least 10 interceptions in his career where he got fortunate the guy didn't catch it or there was a penalty, like a defensive holding, something like that. But he's probably had another 10 that have been picked off that he knew it's a free play. I don't care if it gets picked off. I'm going to make a shot downfield, which to me is enlightening and awesome because a lot of quarterbacks are still worried about throwing the ball, which is weird. You don't check down when you got a free play.
No.
Take a shot, man. That's something Alex Smith would do a little bit, but not a lot. Mahomes, of course, does a great job of that. So the numbers are insane. All right, the Royals have made some moves, and Mahomes is a minority owner of the Royals, so this all ties together. The Royals have signed Michael A. Taylor. He'll get every shot at being the everyday center fielder, Dayton Moore said in a Zoom call Monday. Taylor's 29, signed a one-year deal for $1.75 million, became a free agent in October after seven seasons with the Nationals, won a World Series in 2019 when he had a breakout year. Back in 17, when he had 19 homers, 17 steals. But last year, he had a career low 196. And yet the Royals are all about getting these light-hitting outfielders to run around and cover center and left and right field. Of course, Gordon is retired, so there's opening there, I guess, and I think Bubba Starling might be done. But here's the thing. Taylor's, he's got great speed. He strikes out 31% of the time. The Major League Baseball average is 21%. I'm not enthralled by this pickup at all. But it's a cheap deal. I'm more enthralled by what they did with the pitching. The club hasn't confirmed a deal, but Mike Minor, who was with the Royals and had a really good year a few years ago back in 17, he's 32. He signed a two-year deal back in 16, came off shoulder surgery, did pretty well, ended up being a closer at the end with the Royals with 6-for-6 and save opportunities. Then he signed a three-year deal with Texas, got his money, and he was a Cy Young candidate in the first half, his first year with Texas. Mm-hmm. Finished 14-10, ERA at 3.59. Then last August, he was traded to Oakland, and he made five appearances, four starts, ERA at 5.5. But he's a lefty. He's got experience. He could be a starter, a spot starter. But here's the other thing you need to keep in mind. I think they're signing him to be their closer because they're going to let Greg Holland go. And Minor was great as a closer in abbreviated time a few years ago with the Royals. So I think he might be your next closer. So I like the Minor pickup. Not going to cost him a ton of money. It doesn't look like a two-year deal. And he's pitched pretty well the last couple of years. Michael Taylor, it just seems like that's what the Royals do. They get a whole bunch of light-hitting guys that can't hit the ball out of the park, although Taylor does have some pop. 19 homers, but that was three, 4 years ago. And does have experience winning a World Series with the Nationals, but that strikeout rate way too high, and batting average was really bad. His OPS isn't that great. I don't know about that one. So, anyway, we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see. The Royals aren't going to go out and make some flashy signing. We know
no.
that.
No.